This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When Harnett County resident John Livingston answered his door in the early hours of November 15th, he was surprised to see a law enforcement officer. Sheriff's Deputy Nicholas Cahagas said he was looking for a suspect and he wanted to search the house. John Livingston asked to see a warrant. When the officer said there wasn't one, Livingston started to close his door. Deputy Cahagas took that gesture as an assault, and he forced his way into the house. Moments later, he tased John Livingston. A scuffle ensued, and Cahagas shot Livingston. Minutes passed as John Livingston bled to death on his deck. A grand jury declined to indict Cahagas, and John Livingston's family and friends are left without answers. His death is just one of several incidents of brutal force employed by law enforcement officials in Harnett County. Investigative reporter Mandy Locke uncovered multiple incidents of deadly force by people who are supposed to protect and serve. Her series in the News and Observer chronicles alleged abuse of power in Harnett County, and Mandy Locke from the NNO joins us now. Mandy, welcome. Good to have you here.
Good to be here, Frank.
There's a lot to report here, and you've got a series going right now in the NNO that details all of it. But let's start with this incident that I just talked about. The officer's name is Nicholas Cahagas, and then we're talking about John Livingston, who was the man shot to death. How did Cahagas end up at John Livingston's house that night?
The thing you have to understand about this place in Harnett County is that it's very rural, and a lot of domestic instances. And so on a given night, and especially an overnight shift, you might hear any number of disturbances, bar fights, fist fights that you've got to go and break up. So this particular night, Nick Cahagas is on duty, an overnight shift in November, and he hears about a woman who'd been assaulted by some other women. And he didn't get to the actual call in time before the woman finally gave up. She was tired of waiting for deputies to show up, so she went home. So he called her, and with a little bit of information that she gave him, he decided that he would investigate on his own who had, in fact, assaulted her, even though he did not have the authority to make an arrest, even if he did find the suspect.
So she's given up. She's gone home. He's got this case now, and he's going to go investigate on his own. How does he get to John Livingston? What role did he play in this? Was he any part of the assault?
So Deputy Cahagas patrolled this zone, Anderson Creek, which is a crossroads community in southern Harnett County. And he knew the area well, and he knew the residents very well. And Nick Cahagas knew that three generations of Setzer family members lived in this mobile home community. And he also had heard that Lonnie Setzer had been staying at this address, 172 West Everett Street, recently. And so he connects a few dots and thinks to himself, well, this lady involved in the assault is the sister of a man who I think may have stayed here fairly recently, so let me go knock on the door at 3:30 and see if I can find her.
Knocks on the door. John Livingston answers, and he says, what do you want, and what happens next?
Things did not go well. Mr. Livingston asserted his constitutional right to deny entry to a law enforcement officer without a warrant or without some severe circumstances. The district attorney believed that the moment that the deputy put his shoulder in the threshold of Mr. Livingston's home, that he had entered the home unlawfully.
No warrant. He's in the threshold, and then he claims that Livingston did was to slam the door, said, no, you don't have a warrant. You have no material evidence. It's 3 a.m. I'm going to bed. And you may not enter my home, which he'd already done because his arm was in the threshold. Slams the door, and how does Cahagas take that?
Well, Deputy Cahagas took this moment, this action, the door slamming on him, as something he perceived to be an assault on a government officer, which is a misdemeanor in this state. So he believed at that moment when the door hit his foot and his arm, he had been assaulted and therefore had probable cause to make an arrest. I did have the opportunity to speak to Deputy Cahagas about this very important moment. this very important moment in which the DA saw as unlawful entry and which Deputy Cahagas saw as an assault. And he told me that that is not a moment we should dwell on, that he had been assaulted and he had a duty to take action.
Well, you talked with him. You also talked with John Livingston's roommate who witnessed the entire episode. Remember, John Livingston will be shot to death in this incident in which he is not a suspect and in which there is no material evidence linking him with any crime. There is no warrant. Here's your conversation with Cahagas, and it alternates between him and the witness, Clayton Carroll, who was John Livingston's roommate. Let's listen to this.
I said, all right, well, look, you don't have to let me in, but if I said, but the car is, there's a car back here that I think is involved in the assault. Let me get your information. I'll just follow you in my report. He says, no, I'm going to bed, and tries to slam the door.
It's like, do y'all have a search warrant? And they was like, no. I was like, can we come in and see if he's here? He was like, no, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. He was like, if you ain't get a search warrant, bye, and shut the door. And then they got mad about that.
I'm standing in the doorway, pretty much. I put my arm up in front of my face. The door hits my arm, hits, I guess, probably my foot too. And in one motion, my left arm, but in one motion, it's pushing it back away from your face.
It was just one boom, and then it hit the wall. It's like, boom.
That's not how, you can't just do that. I said, so now you're going to talk to me. At this point, I had probable cause to arrest him for assault on a law enforcement officer. He's not obeying my commands to stop. And instead, he goes and sits in a recliner facing away from me.
Facing away, obedience, the term obedience, didn't obey me, came up several times. As we've already suggested, the prosecutor said he broke the law. That is, the deputy broke the law by entering a house without a warrant. What happened next?
I obtained a copy of the internal affairs file into the investigation into how Deputy Cahagas behaved that night. And there is a really interesting distinction about how Deputy Cahagas and the other deputy who was with him that night described this moment right before the door is knocked in. The other deputy, a young man named John Werbelow, hears his comrade, his buddy, his fellow deputy say, "This is not how this works," as he pushed his way into the home. So if you believe that that was in fact said, it's evidence that Deputy Cahagas believed that Mr. Livingston should have consented, obeyed, acquiesced to his every need and request, but that is in conflict with our civil rights as Americans.
And then he did enter. He was tased, he was pepper sprayed, and finally shot to death. I mean, the account of how Mr. Livingston was shot to death is brutal. How much of that is on the record, and what do we know about how he died?
I spoke to two eyewitnesses who were inside the home. I read accounts that those eyewitnesses gave to sheriff's detectives days after the shooting. I spoke with Deputy Cahagas for more than 4 hours. I read the entire internal affairs investigative file. And I can tell you that in that 10 minutes between the knock on the door and the shots being fired, Mr. Livingston was tased at least twice. He was battered such that he had abrasions about his face. He was elbowed in the ribs, and he was pepper sprayed. Now, Mr. Cahagas, and unfortunately I didn't have a chance to talk to Mr. Livingston, but Deputy Cahagas would say that John Livingston was surprisingly strong. He remembers him being a formidable person. He estimated that he weighed 180 pounds. In fact, Mr. Livingston weighed no more than 130 pounds. He was 100 pounds less weight than Deputy Cahagas. He was at least 5 inches shorter than him, and it was two deputies and one civilian involved in this incident.
Tased, pepper sprayed, shot to death on the floor. At least one prosecutor has said it's pretty clear that Officer Deputy Cahagas entered illegally. He didn't have a warrant. He was over the threshold. Was he indicted?
He was not indicted. The district attorney, a man named Vernon Stewart, submitted an indictment to the grand jury a few weeks ago and asked that they indict Deputy Cahagas for second-degree murder. They declined. The family is confused. The district attorney as well was confused, but he is not going to proceed further. So in his mind, the case is closed. However, the Federal Department of Justice told me last week, and we broke the news Friday with the first day of our series, that they have opened up a criminal civil rights investigation into Deputy Cahagas in the Harnett County Sheriff's Department.
This is not the first murder or the first death that's happened under suspicious circumstances in Harnett County. We're going to talk about a killing that happened several years ago, and we'll talk about that after the break. But I want you to give us just a brief synopsis of how you got involved in the story. In other words, what you had heard about Harnett County and this particular squad of deputies, a surprising number of complaints about brutality given about a particular squad of deputies.
So investigative reporting is kind of an interesting breed. Sometimes we learn about a story or a possible story from a tip. And in this case, that's what happened. An old source of mine, a lawyer, a very eccentric lawyer named Jesse Jones, called me in mid-December to tell me about John Livingston's death. And to me, it sounded troubling enough that I was willing to drive an hour, meet up with an old source of mine, go out to the place where Mr. Livingston died and see what I could see. And immediately I had some concerns and questions about not just the event itself, but what happened? How did this transpire? Were there warning signs? Was there a failure of leadership among county law enforcement to detect troubling behavior before it occurred?
There were a number of warning signs, and we'll talk about all of them. And the death in a padded cell of Brandon Bethea, tased to death. His story had gone unreported until now. It's part of Mandy Locke's report in the News and Observer, an investigative report on what's going on in Harnett County. We'll continue that conversation on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, talking today with investigative reporter Mandy Locke. Her latest series for the News and Observer documents deadly force by law enforcement officials in Harnett County. And we were talking about John Livingston, shot to death earlier this year. No indictment by the officer involved in that case. 5 years ago, Harnett County officers killed another man. That story wasn't public until now. What happened to Brandon Bethea?
Brandon Bethea was in the Harnett County Jail, which is run by the Sheriff's Department, and he was awaiting trial on some really serious charges, attempted rape and assault with a deadly weapon. He was a difficult inmate. I think everyone who knew him could agree with that. He had a mental illness that he may or may not been receiving good treatment for. He was often prone to rants and being mouthy and disobedient. And this particular day, he was testing the detention officers who were responsible for him. Somehow, some way, they decide to take Brandon Bethea into a padded cell, at which point they remove handcuffs from his wrist. And as a detention officer stands behind four of his colleagues, he pulls a taser behind his back and hides it. Then after Brandon Bethea is released from handcuffs, the detention officer steps forward. As Brandon Bethea backs up towards the rear of the padded cell, the detention officer fires the taser into his chest. He collapses on the floor. He rolls onto his stomach. He is surrounded by five detention officers. And then he is tased again and again. And then he is left for 20 minutes, at which point he stops moving.
What happens next?
20 minutes passes. I've now seen and now shared with our audience the video in its entirety.
Yeah, that we should point out that this is not taken from a report.
That's
you can
right.
See this, and there's a link at our website. And I will tell you right now, it is the most brutal, vicious video I have ever seen. I have never seen anything in the animal kingdom that rivals the brutality. And it shocked me. And I almost was embarrassed to be a human being when I saw it. So I should warn you, before you go see this video, you're about to see something that'll change your life.
You can't unsee it. And at this dispatch, I've seen it about 50 times. from beginning to end. I've watched it in the presence of the district attorney, whose job it was to decide whether this was a crime. I watched it in the presence of the new sheriff, who was in the top brass of the department at the time. I've watched it with colleagues. I've watched it with judges and lawyers and other law enforcement officers. And it's disturbing.
We certainly can't say if it's murder. That's up for a court to decide. But when you see this, it would require a long explanation to explain how this was not intentional, or at least the violence that was caused him, maybe not the death. What happens next? We see the gurney come in. He's taken out. The officer who tased him had the decency to vomit into a garbage can, at least understanding that something horrible had happened here. What did the police say about this? What did the sheriff's department say about his death? What happened next?
So in the day of Brandon Bethea's death, the sheriff at the time, Larry Rollins, told several members of the news media who called about it that the detention officer was forced to deploy his taser because of an altercation. He called the detention officer a competent officer, and he offered no more comments. At the same time, a detective for the department was asked to write an incident report. In my reporting this year, I received a copy of that incident report because of a public records request, and I encourage our readers, our audience, to go see that incident report and watch the video. Very little about the way that the incident is described in this public incident report is reflected in the actual video. Details such as what happened to the detention officer. The incident report says that he was injured during the altercation, but when you watch the video, you see that in the 20 minutes that Mr. Bethea was overcome from his injuries, he proceeds to go about his day. He talks to his colleagues. He files some paperwork. He puts the taser back in the drawer. And it's only when paramedics come to try and fail to revive Mr. Bethea that you see detention officer John Clark overcome, and he appears to have some sort of panic or heart condition for which he is later taken to the hospital.
The aftermath of this, in the aftermath, there is no indictment. In fact, there's no real hearing. There's a settlement between the county and the family. Tell us about the settlement.
Harnett County settled with the family of Brandon Bethea pretty quickly after they filed a federal lawsuit within 9 months. So the family filed a wrongful death, civil rights violation lawsuit within a year of Brandon's death. In the process of that, they received from the county a copy of the surveillance video. They received a copy of the report that the State Bureau of Investigation prepared on Brandon's death. None of that was publicly available. In fact, the SBI asked a federal judge to put a protective order over their report. And when the case was finally settled 9 months after the family filed a lawsuit, they required the family to sign a gag order. It was an extremely specific, extremely airtight gag order that required them to never say anything ugly, anything disparaging, anything unkind, or to even discuss the event at all. And if anyone, including a member of the media, called them to ask about it, they were told what to say, which is this: the matter has been resolved.
That's what the new. So we should talk about the fact that this was 5 years ago. You got the video. How did you obtain the video?
You know, Frank, I wish I could claim some sort of brilliance on my part, but the reality is that sometimes you just make your own luck. And in this case, that's what I did. I learned a lot about myself as a reporter this year. Some of it I liked, some of it I didn't. But one thing that I did like is that I've always had this utter lack of inhibition to ask people for things that I think they are going to decline to do for me. So I had a feeling that I would not receive this video if I asked, but I thought, well, the worst they can say is no. So I filed a public records request seeking the video. And I was provided the video from the county attorney. So I learned about myself that saying no, hearing no will not kill you, but not knowing may kill someone.
Well, you talked about to a number of people in Harnett County about the so-called D squad. So let's open this up, because this sounds like two maybe random kind of off the rails situations in a county and things happen. But this is part of a pattern in Harnett County. Tell us about that.
So those questions that I had immediately the day that I went to John Livingston's home was there a pattern of behavior that could have been detected, that should have been detected? And so what I set out to do was evaluate patterns of arrest for two particular charges that veteran law enforcement people will tell you might signify a problem. And that's a high concentration of a charge called resisting a public officer. The charge can signify a lot of things. It can signify the person's being disobedient, failing to follow verbal commands. It can indicate that they ran away from you. It can also indicate that they attempted to physically fight and resist an officer. So what I was able to see was pretty striking. This single squad, which was composed of nine people, had a very high number of these charges. And Deputy Cahagas, who shot John Livingston, had the highest concentration of these charges in 2 years, 2014 and 2015. He had 26 of these charges. That was more than twice the number of any other deputy on the squad.
So this is a pattern. The sheriff, Larry Rollins, who resigned in the midst of your investigation just about a month ago, or so, was the sheriff while all this was going on. There are numerous complaints. We'll talk more about the people you talked with in the county who have been the victims of some of this violence. What did Larry Rollins, who has since resigned, say to you about this pattern?
Sheriff Rollins has declined to speak with me at length about any of this. A number of reporters, including me, were able to catch him for a brief moment after the swearing-in ceremony in which he passed the torch to one of his majors in the department. And we asked him what he thought about what Deputy Cahagas had done and how he behaved that night. And he told us that he thought that Deputy Cahagas was a really good deputy and that he had a tough situation to parse, and that the courts would have a lifetime to dissect what he had to do in a split second.
And what about the new sheriff? Again, these are patterns of behavior. Most law enforcement agencies, good law enforcement officers, and there are many of them all across the state, look at a thing like that and they act. They say, wait a minute, what's going on with that squad that has doubled their number of resisting arrests calls and brutality charges? Great law enforcement officers all across the state who would look into that. Didn't happen here. What does the new sheriff say about this?
You'll have an opportunity to hear a little bit more from our conversation with the new sheriff in the next installment, the last installment of our series, which should go live later this afternoon at newsobserver.com. And what basically he will tell you is that he didn't believe or didn't have any evidence that there was the volume of incidents, or that there were as many incidents as I brought to his office to discuss with him. It did not appear, at least, that they had no written policy or practice by which they routinely review these charges and determine if there are any sort of patterns that they need to look at.
We talked about a number of complaints going on over a period of years. Deputy Cahagas, in fact, was only on the job for 2.5 years when he racked up all these charges. But we talked about John Livingston. We talked about Brandon Bethay, two of several victims of law enforcement in Harnett County. You spoke with a woman named Christine Broom. What happened with her? The police entered her house. Deputies entered her house. Tell us her story.
I'd like to point out for a minute that Deputy Cahagas was not involved in this incident with Ms. Broom. It was two other deputies. But Ms. Broom lives in western Harnett County, and to make money, she rents a room in her home to a man who struggles with a cocaine addiction. She had already forbidden him from being in her home if he was high, and one day he comes home. It was actually New Year's Day of 2015, and he appears to Mrs. Broom to be high on cocaine. So she declines to open the door and let him in. This frustrated him, so he called 911 and asked for deputies to come out. When two deputies arrived, they proceeded to help this tenant force their way through the doors of Ms. Broom's house, even though she is inside verbally declining access. They tell her that if she doesn't open the door, they will arrest her. And when they manage to break in the door of her home, which is still, by the way, broken, they proceed to arrest her for resisting a public officer.
She talked about this with you and what happened and how she's reflected on it since. Let's listen.
I dial 911. I get on the phone with an operator and I said, look, I have two sheriffs here at my door. They're trying to break into my house. I said, I need help. I said, I'm asking them for a warrant. I'm asking them to leave. I'm telling them, you know, I don't know really what's going on. I don't know why they're here trying to break into my house. They're just doing it. So I asked this operator to send somebody else out. And next thing you know, I see the sheriff speaking into his radio on his shoulder pad. And the operator hangs up on me. I've never been in trouble with the law. Never. Having them break into my home like that was the most violating thing that ever happened to me. This is my home. This is the one place where I'm supposed to feel protected, safe. And I wasn't. Oh, they loved that power trip. They enjoyed it. I wish I had went and complained about this sooner. I feel very guilty for what happened to Mr. Livingston. I wonder if I had spoken up earlier, if this could have been prevented.
It's Christine Broom talking with Mandy Locke, an investigative reporter for the NNO, who's been reporting on what's going on in Harnett County. That report is, the series is ongoing in the NNO. She did report it, didn't she? Did she report it to the district attorney's office or not at all?
She did. Ms. Broom filed two fairly significant and in-depth complaints to both the sheriff's department and the district attorney's office. And not to give any spoiler alerts, but you can hear a little bit more about what happened when she did that in the final installment of the series, which again goes on our website today.
There are others. We could get into other stories, but again, I think you know, there, you go into detail in your report other stories that you document. What's happening now? Federal investigators have gotten involved since this report came to light.
Federal investigators are involved at least insofar as it relates to Mr. Livingston's death. It will be clear, hopefully soon, whether they expand or not their investigation. Part of the what I learned in my reporting this year is how much autonomy sheriffs in this state have. So, again, I'll explain all this in the last installment of the series. But citizens, if they feel that they've been mistreated by sheriff's deputies, the place they're supposed to go is to the sheriff to complain about this. But yet it's treated as an internal affairs, as a private personnel matter that they will never hear the resolution of. So it puts the citizens in a little bit of a trust me, but they're already in a position of not trusting because of what they say happened to them.
Right. And again, there's evidence of this in videos that your interviews with individuals who talk about their mistrust, that is a well-earned mistrust over time in this place. Also a very poor area. These are people who don't have lawyers and who don't have connections at City Hall. And this D Squad, again, you've taken a look at some of their Facebook postings, in particular by Officer Cahagas, and it suggests a kind of culture of there's a kind of cultural violence, but also we're going to clean up this county.
I will also tell you that the Facebook post that we were able to obtain that Deputy Cahagas had made months prior to Mr. Livingston's death, one in particular has resonated with people and frustrated people. And it went like this. He posted on Facebook a picture of an airplane dropping napalm. And above it, he writes this statement that, after 671 days of patrolling his zone, he believed that this would be a good way to clean it up. But then he said, no, it might not burn hot enough.
Mandy, there's a federal investigation. Tell us what we know about that.
Very little. The federal Department of Justice does not tend to disclose much about their ongoing work until it is concluded. But I did meet with the acting U.S. attorney for the Eastern District, who told me that they have opened a civil federal rights investigation into the death of John Livingston.
Mandy, this is dangerous work. You've been going down into a county where apparently there are officers who believe they're a law unto themselves, unto their own. Federal courts will determine this for sure. This has not been easy for you, and it's not been safe as well. Tell us about the risk to you.
Well, I think anytime you have a story like this, you have to take necessary precautions, and so we have done that in this case. I do not feel scared. It's kind of important in this work that you feel free to ask the tough questions, feel free to travel in the county, feel free to be seen and be heard. And I believe that my colleague, Travis Long, who you must see his video and photography work, he's just a brilliant journalist, and I was so fortunate to work with him on this. So we traveled all over the county, and we went to lots of places and asked lots of tough questions. But, you know, there was a moment in working on this series in which both Travis and I realized the weight of this story. Here we are in a county that's just an hour from Raleigh, just an hour. It's very close. But it does not have a consistent media presence. And it absolutely does not have an investigative reporter parked in the courthouse day after day. So we were the subject of much intrigue for a long while. And then we realized that we were the only people that were hearing these residents complain about the sheriff's department, and there was a lawyer there who was making a lot of noise about this, but because of his personality and because of some politics in the county, people were not hearing him. And so it was incumbent on Travis and I to hear, report, understand, and tell people what's happening.
We're all grateful to you. Thank you very much. Mandy Locke, investigative reporter for the NNO. To find links to her series, go to our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you, Mandy.
Thank you, Frank.
Coming up, the future of space exploration. And NASA astronaut Doug Wheelock joins us, and your phone calls and tweets and emails. Join us on the State of Things.